We're going to call the first meeting of the Ways and Means Committee meeting to order. Thank you very much for coming here and staying late. Our normal meeting times will be on Mondays, but we probably won't meet very many times normally. So we will find other times that we have to meet in order to accomplish our business. A couple of things on the agenda, and I want to start off by having a brief introduction. So Representative Kahn, would you like to start and just give us your name and where you represent very briefly, please?
So it's Kahn, District 59B, mostly southeast Minneapolis.
Representative Dean, do you want to do that? Introduction.
Matt Dean from Northern Washington County Stillwater area.
Greg David, District 31B, the name you know, the name you trust.
It's just a matter of how long you trust it, huh?
Deborah Hilston, I represent all of the city of Brooklyn Center and part of Brooklyn Park.
Tom Tilbury, 51D, which is Brittany, Spring Lake Park, Mounds View, and a portion of Blaine.
Representative Julie Bond, 56A, area stretching from Stillwater down to Woodbury, representing parts of 10 communities.
I'm Randy Demmer, District 29A. I live in Hayfield, which is, and I represent Dodge County and western and northern Olmsted County, including part of Rochester.
Hey, Liz, you're just in time.
I know I was recovering from saying I agreed with the state senate and the
Star
Tribune editorial board. Mary Liz Kohlberg, Blakeville.
We can take your temperature. Mary Liz is the lead Republican on this committee. I'm Orrin Solberg, 3B, chair of the committee. We'll introduce staff shortly.
Representative Tim Faust from District 8B, which is all of Kennebec County, southern half of Pine County, and a little bit of Isanti County.
And Tim is going to be the vice chair this year.
Representative Michael Nelson, I'm from, I represent the southern half of Brooklyn Park.
I'm Marcia Swales, I represent Woodbury and Landfall.
Liz and Carlson, I represent all the city of Robinson, Crystal, and part of the Golden Valley.
Danny McNamara, 57B, I live in Hastings.
Carlos Mariani, 65B, and I have the central part of St. Paul, District 65B.
Hi, Tom Huntley, 7A. I represent Greg David's daughters when they go to UMD.
and mine. I'm Tim Mahoney. I represent 67A, which is the northeast corner of the city of St. Paul.
Maria Rood, 42A, which is southern Minnetonka and northern Eden Prairie.
Jim Abler and Elka in the city of Maine.
Did we miss anybody? Oops. Okay, staff. Kathy, you want to start?
Mm-hmm. I'm Kathy Novick, a host research department.
Bill Marks, fiscal staff.
I'm Brian Shackleton, committee administrator.
Gary Boyce, committee legislative assistant.
A couple of DFL or Republican research people, are they here? Oh, they must have went home. Don't blame any. We'll get them next time. And we have a couple pages. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Tom McKinnon. I live in St. Paul.
Call a little bit of more history than that. So you did about what you do before you got this job?
Let's see. I'm a state carpenter. I've been working
carpenters
for the last 7-8 years.
All right. And?
I'm
from Kenya, Minnesota, school in the last couple of years, I've sort of been working in the world, mostly between 6 months in Antarctica and 6 months in Utah.
All right. Where was
the colder, Utah or Antarctica? Or Kenya?
Minnesota.
So you know Representative Swigum then?
Yep, I played basketball with Mars, and I was in Arizona class.
All right. Okay, did everybody get introduced?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ann.
I'm asking a rep, Sam Bloomington.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for showing up again. Now, the agenda today, first of all, the unemployment one, Representative Mahoney. We have the Senate file in front of us, so Representative Mahoney will move to lay House file number 4 on the table indefinitely and indefinitely postpone House file 4. And we have to vote on that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And Representative Mahoney, you have the Senate file. The Senate has passed it, so that's why it's in our possession. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House file 4, Senate, the Senate file is identical to House
please,
file.
Please, before you start, let's, you want to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move Senate file 4 and to the House floor.
You recommend to pass. Representative Mahoney moves the Senate file number 4. You recommend to pass and placed on the special, no, not special, just general orders.
General orders.
General Register. That's right. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you.
Explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to just give, as this is just really the Ways and Means, this is the Ways and Means Committee. I will talk more about the money, but I will give you a short explanation of the bill. I will start with Section 2 because it's a little simpler. Section 2 creates a state unemployment extension. And it is something that we have done numerous times before. It helps approximately 12,000 people over the year, and it will cost the average payment will be $215 per week for a length of about 15 weeks. The extension will cost an approximate $2 million per month the first 3 months and $1 million a month ongoing after that. Section one is really the whole purpose of the bill, which is to, in my mind, actually makes more people or allows us to be eligible, more people to be eligible for the federal extension, unemployment extension. And that does that by creating a new period, base period. Previously, we've had the first four quarters of the last five quarters. This bill creates a option to use the last four quarters, whichever works out better for you. Total cost of the bill, I think there is a I have misplaced my
there is personal. A fiscal note in your packet, members. The total cost in 2009 and 2010 combined is $16 million, $8 in each, from the unemployment fund, nothing from the general fund.
Right, from the unemployment trust fund. And the most asked question throughout is how this affects the unemployment trust fund. Members, we have about 250,000 people or just shy of that going to be on unemployment or unemployed by the end of this year. Our trust fund, whether this bill passes or not, will go into deficit the last week of December of 2009. with this bill, it will go into deficit 72 hours sooner. This is not the first time that we will have gone into deficit. It will be paid back over the years. The second asked question is how this will affect employers. It really won't. They are at the highest level of insurance payment, and it's set by law. They are at that level this year. They are at that level next year. And for the foreseeable future, they will be at that.
Any questions from members? Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, do you have any documentation that shows the projected health of this fund, how long it's projected to be in deficit, and when it's projected to come back out? And do you have any information on, you say it's been in deficit before, how often and for how long a period of time?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I will call down Lee Nelson from the Department of
Mr. Nelson
for deed with the unemployment insurance, and I'm sure he can answer that particular question.
Welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Representative Fulbert, to your exact question, I thought I brought it with me, but I left it back in my office. The spreadsheets can give you the projection. I will have it delivered to every member of this committee tomorrow. We already forwarded it to a number of other committees that this bill has been heard in, but we'll forward it to this committee tomorrow morning, which will give you the spreadsheet of the projections.
Yes.
And some of it is all based on, you know, what will Minnesota's unemployment rate be in the future? And it's, you know, based on Global Insight and the Department of Finance's projections, then we plug that back into, you know, our figures to try to determine the trust fund. The trust fund will be in deficit status indefinitely. But that's based on Global Insight's projections. Whether the economic stimulus will change that out into the future, we don't know.
If you would forward those to the committee administrator,
we'll do.
The state of assistance, we'll make sure that they get out to everybody.
In relation,
I'd like that.
Representative Holbrook.
I'd also like some context for historically, what has this fund ever been in a situation where it was in deficit forever? And given Representative Solberg and I sat through the Council of Economic Advisors yesterday in preparation for the next budget forecast, and I'm guessing that the picture won't get any better in February for this situation either.
Mr. Chairman, Solberg, the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund borrowed from the Federal Treasury in the 70s. In the early 80s, and then again in 2002 and in 2003. To give perspective, in March of 2003, the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund was $443 million in deficit to the Federal Treasury. Some adjustments were made by the legislature to tax structure in 2002, and the fund recovered. It will self-correct, ultimately.
If you can give us some historical perspective on the length of time, how far we were in debt, and how the length of time to recovery. I think that's what Representative Holbrook.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I'm just concerned. Certainly, I understand the impact for people being out of work, but I'm also worried if we're passing this and don't have money, if we're going to drive some type of tax increase on business to get this fund back into a healthy state as well.
Okay, if you'd provide those that information, we'd appreciate it. Any other questions from members? Julie Bunn? President Bunn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of my question's been answered. The question was, when it goes into deficit, where do the funds come from? You just mentioned we were borrowed from the Federal Treasury. Does it ever come from state sources or a portion of it at the same time? And then you mentioned also that eventually adjusted through some tax changes. Was that federal and state or just one or the other?
Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's already, federal law provides for the automatic borrowing, state statute provides for the automatic borrowing if the trust fund goes into deficit. We actually borrow in the Federal Treasury from the Federal Unemployment Trust Fund. There's a special fund out there for states borrowing. Currently, the state of Michigan is almost $1 billion in deficit. Wisconsin will go into deficit next month. There are about half the states are projected to go into deficit status this year. It's all, when you say the changes made in 2002 were simply to the tax structure to speed up the payments. No tax increase was done in 2002, but what it was, it gets fairly complicated what was done, but it just accelerated the employer's payments rather than having them pay more. They just paid it in a little quicker.
Okay, Representative Bunn, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The quick follow up is that when you say you borrow it from the federal fund, is there a state incurred additional cost in terms of interest payments on that borrowing? That is from state funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is a interest charge which is already in the statute. There's, once the trust fund goes into deficit status, a special surcharge is placed on employer unemployment insurance taxes to pay that interest. The interest rate is currently 4.8%, I believe, for 2009. As Representative Mahoney indicated, this will cause the trust fund to go into deficit status 3 days earlier than currently. Currently, we're paying out over $35 million a week. The total cost of this bill is $16 million, so less than 3 days' worth of benefits. But the people involved here are what's going to call the lowest of the low who aren't receiving this federal extension. And I could get into why they're not, but that was for some of the other committees.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, I apologize, I missed your name, but you piqued my, Mr. Nelson, yes, correct, you piqued my interest, and you might have said this, and I didn't hear it either, but in the proposed federal stimulus bill, are there provisions for unemployment assistance?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, there are a number of provisions. If the federal stimulus bill passes, President Obama has proposed, we will be coming forward because there are going to be some legislative changes which need to take place. Minnesota will receive a payment to its trust fund. Project on the current proposal would be $120 million would be paid into the trust fund. We would be required to do a number of statutory changes regarding benefit changes to be entitled to that money.
Mr. Chair, perhaps another reason for us as state legislators to encourage D.C. to not drag its feet on the stimulus package.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, Representative Mahoney mentioned that there won't be necessary for any kind of a tax increase because of the $16 million. I just wanted to clarify, this will be $16 million of additional expense that will be borne by the Minnesota business at some point in time if we pass this legislation. Is that a true statement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is true. No individual employer will see a tax increase as a result of this. This will all come out of the base rates, which are currently in place, which are all set at the maximum. But ultimately, yes, the cost will be borne by Minnesota employers at some point out there in the future.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify. Thank you, Mr. Chair, that there is no free lunch. This is a real important bill, and Representative Mahoney, I appreciate your bringing it forward, but we've got to be sure that we all understand this is $16 million more at this time and place that we're placing on the businesses of Minnesota to fund this very important program.
Mr. Representative Nelson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nelson. But isn't that kind of normal for as far as increasing? I mean, the mod that the employer's pay goes up when they have higher unemployment, and so if there are more employers out there laying more people off and putting more people on employment, their mod's going to go up, so their rates are going to go up anyways based on the way the system works, is my understanding. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, yes, you are correct, but this bill provides that this extension is not charged back to any individual employer the way the federal extension is not charged to any individual employer. The regular benefits, state benefits, are charged back into employers' experience ratings and they pay higher taxes in the future. That's why the fund will recover on its own ultimately. But this particular legislation provides that it's not charged back to any individual employer. So it's a, we call, use the term socialized cost. It's spread across all employers generally.
Other questions? Representative Holbrook?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Okay. Just do it real briefly. As I listened to Mr. Nelson rattle off all the problems in all the other states, what's the status of the federal funds?
They can print money.
Yeah.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the last time I heard it had $31 billion in it. I can get into some things like it's used to offset the federal deficit, so it may be just a paper on paper. But it is being depleted quite rapidly because of the federal extensions all come out of that fund. If President Obama's stimulus extends that federal extension for about another year, how much that will cost, I don't know. But it is being depleted.
And okay, let's go
one more quick question, yep. And I'm sorry. And
that's
how,
okay, no problem.
And how is that fund funded? Is that also a tax on business, or does it come out of a general fund appropriation by Congress?
Mr.
Chairman, Holberg, all employers in Minnesota pay a tax which essentially amounts to $56 a worker. It's a federal unemployment tax, a separate tax. It essentially, it's a little more complicated than that, but amounts to $56 per worker.
Per year?
Per year, excuse me, yes, per year.
Other questions? If not, then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that Senate File 4 be recommended to pass and placed in the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Next on the agenda is Representative Hosh. Okay. Well, members of Mr. Berg, our fiscal analyst, had the spreadsheet here. So the one that you asked for, Representative Holberg, is here already. So, let's go down to the next one, Lynn Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 95 as introduced to be sent to the General Register.
Representative Lincheski moves that House File 95 recommends a pass and placed in the General Registry. Mm-hmm. Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I've asked Commissioner Inez, Commissioner of Revenue, to join me just quickly cover the bill, if that's all right with you. Members, this bill is really the final housekeeping detail and closure of the 2008 omnibus tax bill. Basically, it repeals one health credit and puts a different one in, and it changes the maintenance of effort provision where there was a lot of confusion. In just a little background, what happened was, and the commissioner will correct me if I'm wrong, and all of us who were there have a slightly different interpretation of what happened. So I think, you know, kind of everybody was at fault as this played out. But as we adjourned, after the tax bill signed, we weren't in session, so the governor couldn't meet with legislative leaders to say, here's a problem. He had to make a decision, either sign or veto. In his determination, and I certainly won't speak for him, he said, you know, I'm not going to sign with these two provisions. I didn't want this health care credit. I wanted that one. I didn't, we thought the MOE thing didn't cost anything. Turns out it does. So if you would like this bill signed, you're going to have to make these changes. Senator Pogomiller, Speaker Kelleher, myself, and Senate Tax Chair Bach agreed to sign a letter saying we would do so as quickly as we could at the beginning of session, and the tax bill was signed. At that time, the governor wrote that in his letter to all of you in May 27th, and told you that was what he did. Both Speaker Kelleher and Senate Majority Leader Pogomiller wrote that to you all as well on May 27th, covered heavily in the press. Those affected interest groups were directed by Commissioner Hansen to assume these changes would be made, and it was built, in fact, into the forecast. So these changes, although not passed, were built into the forecast. So now we're at the point where we are moving this through the process to honor the commitment. I think both of these provisions will be controversial later in the year, but to get the tax bill signed, this is what the leaders agreed to. And I do want to, for the record, thank Representative Broad, who's my second author. This is complicated, and there's a lot of feelings around it, but it was the agreement that was struck to get the tax bill signed this summer. I guess the other alternative would have been a special session, but so that's what this bill is doing here today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? We usually don't take testimony, but if you want to say something since you're sitting at the table, we'll welcome any words of wisdom that you have.
Well, I don't have any words of wisdom, Chairman, but I can say that Representative...
Would you want to introduce yourself for the
Ward Nias, I'm representing the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I can attest to the fact that Representative Lincheski's rendition of the event was accurate. This was something that was flagged after the fact. We quickly conferred with leadership and the two tax chairs, and we all agreed that these two changes should be made in order to get the final bill passed. Just one of those things that happens in the confusion of three and four in the morning decisions being made. I think we all think this accurately reflects leadership agreement. And I think one maybe correction to what Representative Lincheski said is if we don't pass this and sign this into law, there will be a forecast adjustment in February. There will be a forecast adjustment of $200 million in the February forecast if we don't pass and make these two corrections.
Actually, I think the total is 300. It's 100 this year, by understanding, and 200 in the next fiscal year. So, Representative Westphal.
Mr. Chair, maybe to Commissioner or to the Chair, what's the consequence if we don't pass this? What's the fiscal impact? You said we redo the forecast to go up or down, or what's the consequence of not doing this?
Ms. Dinas.
I'm Chairman, I'm Representative. As the Chairman said, it would be a forecast adjustment that would make the budget deficit $300 million worse over the next three fiscal years if we did not pass this maintenance of effort requirement. And that's the result of some of these maintenance of effort and matching fund requirements need to be backfilled in order to obtain the federal dollars. It's a very complicated, most of the impacts on the DHS area. And this issue actually was flagged by the Department of Health and Human Services. They brought it to our attention and started doing the quick math in the back of the napkin, and we realized the impact of this MOE language was in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And with the deficit already coming down the pipe, we knew we had to act quickly to try to remedy or mitigate the impact of this language. You know, it's probably worth adding that the governor has become very engaged on this issue since this was flagged in the tax bill. He has met numerous times with representatives of the counties, AMC and others, and he has been committed to trying to unravel some of these MOEs, modernize them, update them. Many of these have been on the books for more than two decades and haven't been revisited, but they are very complicated. It takes a lot of due diligence. You need the right people around the table to make the decisions about which ones we can unravel, which ones we can't. We don't want to have any unintended consequences to core functions like mental health and chemical dependency. So we want to do it in a very thoughtful, deliberative way. We think we've brought many of the right people to the table to make those decisions. The governor has given his cabinet a clear, unequivocal directive that we need to address these issues to the best of our ability. And we've given a tick list to each commissioner, which ones are within their jurisdiction, and say, go through these. Just saying no to one of these is not an option. If repealing the MOE doesn't make sense, tell us why and tell us what is an alternative to achieve the same result. So I think it's a discussion and a dialogue that's long overdue, and the governor, as you mentioned, state-to-state is engaged on it. So this isn't the end of the story as far as MOEs and matching fund requirements and unfunded mandates. It's really just the beginning. But in order to avoid a negative impact in the February forecast, we really need to act and resolve this. So we appreciate that.
Follow-up,
Mr. Chair, and maybe to Chair Lanchesky and the Commissioner if he has any comments, but you mentioned that there may be discussions to change this in the future. What will those changes be versus what's in here potentially? And I understand there's a lot of complicated things with that, but what kind of changes do you foresee coming that you referenced in your earlier comments?
Representative Lanchesky, do you want to take a stab at it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Westrom, I think it's going to take about half of the committees in the Minnesota House to figure that out. There are MOE issues rampant through both the health care committees and the education committees, public safety, the tax committee, and I think following up with what Commissioner Ina said, you know, the governor wants to look. I think the House has to, too. These counties are going to have a lot of stress put on them as the state begins to cut, and they need more flexibility. The flip side is those who may be affected by those changes are going to have to be heard, too, as they could result in layoffs throughout the system, whether it's in libraries or somewhere else. And we need, you know, time to have a big debate. I think, you know, I just want to be honest with people, and I said this in Texas, I'm not a big fan of either one of these provisions in this bill. I actually thought the signed pieces were a little better. But I think these are just honest mistakes that happen when, for example, we thought the maintenance of effort provision didn't cost anything. And then we found it actually cost $300 million. And the health care credit, there's just a debate between which one works better. Some would say the one that was currently in the bill actually would provide health care coverage for a lot more people. That would be me. And others would say that, and then the one that we're going to pass would actually cover less people. And you know, we would have the debate again about who's covering more, better, cheaper. But I think given the size of the deficit, we may find out that neither the health care credit and current law or the one we're passing, they could be affordable. We don't know. I mean, I just think we all just have to be honest about even what we knew on May 27th after we were gone is not what we know today. But to me, this is about honoring a commitment. It's about honoring a commitment And certainly the people who are not in the legislature don't need to honor that commitment because they weren't here. And the people who didn't vote for the tax bill, you know, they voted no. I think there are three or four. But I think the rest of us, you know, our leaders who we elect, who we may or may not agree with, and the governor, who the Minnesotans elect, made a decision that they agreed to change these two provisions to sign the tax bill. And, you know, certainly there'll be those who don't agree with that, but that's the decision they made, and I'm, as the chief officer, carrying it through to honor the commitment. And I think there's a trust issue, honestly, between the House and the Senate and the governor. I think we need to start the year out because it's going to be really tough. It's honoring our commitments of last year, and so that's why I'm willing to carry it, even though I'm not the biggest fan of the provisions, but we'll debate them anew.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had one short question for either Commissioner Innes or the author, and not that we would ever be influenced on anything that the Senate is doing or not doing, but where's the Senate on this? Are they same stage we are?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe, you know, this is about testing the Senate, too. I mean, the House, in my estimation, has to honor the commitment that they made to do this, as was stated by the leaders. And it needs to do it, it needs to get it before it needs to pass. The Senate has that exact same commitment. And I think we'll, I expect they're going to do it, but we're none of us know. And I think the House has to honor its commitment, and then the Senate will take their steps, and then the governor will take his. I don't anticipate that we won't get there.
Representative Hoppe, this also has to be a House file. It has to pass the House first.
I know. I was understanding that, and I understand the natural inclination of the Senate is to follow the leader. I just want to make sure that
the Senate Commissioner?
Chairman, Representative Hoppe, the only thing I'd add to that is Senator Bach has agreed to ask Chief of the bill.
Okay.
He wanted the signatures on a letter. It was heard in tax committee today and passed out. And so I believe it's on the floor currently.
Okay. Thank you.
Other discussions, other questions? If not, then Representative Lincheski renews her motion that House File 95 be recommended to pass, placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
And carried. Thank you. Representative Fox. He just about lost the bill. Welcome to the committee. Representative Carlson, would you move the bill that came through your committee?
I'll move the bill.
Representative Carlson moves that House File 56 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry for the confusion. For some reason, I did not have this on my schedule, and I'm just glad I was in my office when I got the notification.
You're a nice enough guy. We'd have handled it.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the committee's time of hearing this bill. There is some urgency to it. House File 56 is addressing a technical correction issue where there are some bonding proceeds allocated to purchase 23 acres in Stearns County, but the allocation was to the Central Minnesota Parks Board. That board, however, cannot own land according to statute. Therefore, we need to make a technical correction to administer the dollars to Stearns County and then have the park as part of the Central Minnesota Parks Board. And that's simply what we're trying to do with addressing a concern with the Department of Finance. There is some urgency because there is a purchase agreement with this land, and we kind of need to get the funds out there so the purchase agreement can be executed.
Any questions at all? Representative Holbrook?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this question is for you. Can you tell me why this didn't go to the bonding committee? So is the correcting of bonding
issue? I think it did. It was heard in the bonding committee. The bonding committee is now part of the finance, so they've it comes back to the, by memo, back to the finance committee.
Okay.
So it was heard in the bonding committee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, generally these kinds of things, you like to get the signature of the committee chair. Does Representative Hausman support this bill as
Mr.
well?
Mr. Hosh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it was heard in Representative Hausman's committee, and I believe she made the motion to move it forward. So,
all right, thank you.
Other questions, Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does anybody not support this? Do we have peace in the valley?
Probably the only peace we'll have this year in the valley.
Let's enjoy it for a moment.
Okay, let's enjoy it. Anybody, any other questions? No, I trust we're going to have lots of peace both times. Representative Carlson then renews his motion the House File 56 be recommended passed and placed in the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Members, we have one more part of the agenda today that I think is extremely important. We've asked the Commissioner of Administration, Ms. Badgerow, to give us a little bit of a presentation. Last year in 2008, the Subcommittee on Government Accountability of the Legislature Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policies was established in law. And Senator Cohen and I chaired that subcommittee. The charge of the subcommittee was to try to update a little bit and review and how we can use the Minnesota Milestones legislation. Another part of that legislation was a charge to the Sesquicentennial Commission to have some opportunities for Minnesotans to react, to be able to have an opportunity for them to tell the Sesquicentennial Commission how they felt that the government should be working in the state of Minnesota. And the Sesquicentennial Commission had quite an extensive survey at their state fair and have a report in as part of their final report as well, and they presented that to the subcommittee. The Minnesota Management Budget in Chapter 318 also requires the budget changes items in the budget book to identify relevant Minnesota milestones and other statewide goals as indicators related to the proposed initiative. And we are instructing as much as we can each committee to start implementing budgeting for outcomes. So I appreciate the commissioner taking that time to give us a short presentation on her work. She's done a great deal of work in the administration on this, and so welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dana Badgerow, the Commissioner of Administration. I'm also here this evening as the chair of the Governor's Subcabinet on the Drive to Excellence. Let me just mention, first of all, the milestones work is proceeding as required by statute. Mr. Gillespie, our state demographer, is leading that effort and was not able to be here tonight, or he would report to you on the status of validating these milestones that were developed in the 90s, updating them and refreshing them and making them more current for our activities. For example, transportation was not a big issue in the 90s, and we certainly know that it is now. So those milestones, those are long-term goals for the state of Minnesota, will be revalidated here in the coming months. And we will be talking with you about those and hope to get some consensus both among the executive and the legislative branches about what those milestones are. Where ought we to be going with all of these long-term goals? But tonight I want to just talk very, very briefly about an effort that we have under the umbrella of the Drive to Excellence to actually report to the public about what state agencies are doing. And so in November, we launched this website called Accountability Minnesota, and I want to very briefly preview it for you here this evening. It is, I mentioned, a public website. It is an effort to show every single state agency's primary goals and the measures that they are putting in place to track against those goals and in a consistent way, an easy-to-understand way. And I'm going to show you how that works. We have 25 state agencies who are actually reporting on a total of 94 goals, many of them, I'm sure, relevant to your respective committees, with 180 performance measures that are being tracked with current data. Agencies are submitting that information to us, and we're collating it and populating this website in a way that we think is publicly appealing so that it's not dry and boring. And we did go online in November of 2008. The first full update will occur at the close of the fiscal year because people will have new data, new metrics, and performance results after the close of the fiscal year. So we will be updating it in September, summer of 2009. We get over 1,000 hits a day. So this is developing into a fairly popular website with members of the Minnesota public. It is accessible, obviously, from North Star. This logo that you see here appears on North Star so that you can go directly to that logo and click on it. They can view the content, and I'll show you this, by a variety of ways, by theme, if you want to, what are all the goals around environment, for example, by agency, or by using a search feature.
And we also have a feedback feature so that the public can tell us what they think about the goals or what they think about an agency's progress toward those goals. Lots of additional information on the website, the agency profiles, their strategic plans, and some amount of detail on their activities and programs. We do not attempt to dictate what agencies' goals. Obviously, we would be in no position to do that. So agencies develop their own goals and measures. We are simply reporting them to the public. So this is the website. It's the front page. And now if the gods of technology are with us, we will go to that site. This is, in fact, the live view of the site. We think it's clean. It shows eight separate subject areas about which we can report. So there are a series of goals around the economy, education, energy and environment, healthcare, public safety, government reform, families and community, and transportation. And I'll just click on economy just to give you a flavor. You can see in the economy there's a whole long list of goals. Now, each of these goals is owned by one or more agencies, but improving the marketability of our agricultural products, or protecting the safety of food supply, or creating and retaining jobs, obviously. I could click on each one of those, and it would take you to the agency that owns that goal, and it would show you their metrics. In the interest of time, let me just go down now. We'll go to the next search feature, which is going to by agency. So let us just go, for example, to corrections. And in corrections, you'll see, again, their mission, their vision is there, and then their primary goals. And we've tried to keep goals to a relatively small number so that the meaningful goals are actually reported here. They have five goals that are strategic to their agency. And I'll click down just a little bit more, and you can see here's the feedback button. If I were to click on that, which I will, it's a form, it's a drop-down form that's very easy to fill out, select the agency. Are we reporting on the right measures? Yes or no? And if no, give us your suggestions. Which measures are more important to you as a member of the public? What do you think of our targets? And is there anything confusing about the site and an opportunity to give us some general comments? The site is relatively new. The comments go directly to the agency. We don't try to funnel them or do any kind of centralized response. So we've gotten not too many comments. In the Department of Administration, actually, we've received no comments. But I'm certain others have. Let me go to Natural Resources. In the Department of Natural Resources, let me go to Goal 4. High quality and diverse outdoor recreation system. A couple of features for the visually impaired. We have got little graphics over each of the pictures describing what the picture is. And this is 10 of Minnesota's top 35 tourism attractions are in state parks. That's what that little caption says. If you go down a little bit further, just a couple more features of the site, and then I'll move on. You'll see here is a goal. Degree of satisfaction of the public with the state park site. You'll notice that there is a target. Every single one of these goals has a target. The goal is 95% satisfaction. And you will see that overall they are not meeting that goal. That's right, they are meeting it entirely. You'll see the exceeded, the mostly succeeded, and the completely satisfied. And they are at about, let's see where they are, because the next feature is I can go to the data table and actually click on that, and it will then display the data table to get the exact numbers. And there they are. You can see for 2007, 26% exceeded satisfaction rates and so forth. So all of the detailed data that's behind each of these bar charts or graphs is available to the public. And just a couple more real quickly. Explore Minnesota Tourism. Well, let me just, in the interest of time, I'm keeping you from dinner. Let me just quickly go to the Department of Administration, of course, because I can speak both specifically to that. And on goal number 3, for example, our goals are reducing the cost of government services, increasing the effectiveness and efficiency of those services, providing products and services that are environmentally friendly. Let me click on that one for a moment. And you will see we'll go right to our E85 goals, to increase the usage of E85 in state vehicles. We describe the goal, we talk about what we're doing, our progress against it, and then you can see our target goal for fiscal 09 is 20%. And so far we are at, for fiscal 2008, we were at 9.5%.
They have a goal on energy consumption in the capital area and so forth. So then you ask the question, are these goals, you know, real, or are they window dressing? And I can, of course, not speak to every single agency, but what I want to talk about is what we're doing in our agency, again, very, very quickly. We obviously have a mission, as does every single state agency, and I kind of went through those. Innovation and efficiency, cost reduction. The work environment of our agency is a very important goal. Every single operation, and we have 13 different operations in the Department of Administration, annually prepares a set of detailed goals that underlie each of these. We review them quarterly. We have a quarterly operations review with each division, and we base our data and decisions, we base our decisions on data. Every single business does a customer survey annually. Here are some agency objectives. I'll just give you a couple examples. Process NOD bid purchase orders, request within 2.5 days. There's specific measurable goals in each case. Reduce the capital complex building energy consumption by 10% and so forth. What we then do is drill those down, and no one can possibly read this, but I want you to just get a flavor that in the plant management division, for example, these are goals that are then owned by each individual employee. Here's a quarter-by-quarter measurement against the goal and some comments on how they're doing. So, for example, we have a goal around automating state mail. We save $800,000 a year for state agencies by automating their mail and getting lower postage rates. So our goal is obviously to continue the increase of how much we're doing. Our goal is 90% of state agency mail will be automated in a way that we can get the lower postage rates. And you can see that in fiscal 08, our goal was achieved and exceeded with 92.4% of that federal mail automated with $806,000 in savings. It's a whirlwind tour of Accountability Minnesota. I really do, 1,000 people are going to it every day, so I would hope that a number of legislators will also go to it and see what's there. And as your committees, your agencies come up before these committees, challenge them on these goals. If you think they're the right ones or not the right ones, or you have some question or quarrel with their progress against those goals, I think those are the bases for good budget decisions. That concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, thank you very much. Is there any questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, are those comments that are sent directly to the agencies, is there a way for us to see those, or short of asking the agency for them?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, we've implemented this site on a shoestring, so we don't really have a sustaining staff to collect and manage the data. We have a very skilled graphic artist and a web populator, and then I've done it with our Drive to Excellence program manager has done most of the program management work. So we are not collecting the state agency comments, so I guess your best bet would be to ask the agencies as they come before you.
Okay. Other questions at all? Yes, Representative Carlson.
A quick one, and this one maybe isn't the best example of what I'm asking, but some of the state agencies, when you have them, they have 4 or 5 goals. Do you have them rank those goals in terms of which goals are more important than some of the other goals, seeing that we're going to enter a very difficult budgetary period?
Well, I think that would be a good question. We've ranked ours. Ours are ranked in order, but they're very generic, very high-level, 40,000-foot goals, and that is also the case with many of these here. I think it's the sub-goals. If you get down, for example, into our plant management division, is it more important that we increase recycling or reduce energy consumption? Or, you know, sometimes these are Hobson's choices. But I think, no. Basically, the goals that are arrayed here are the very most important high-level goals of each agency, but I doubt that they are priority rated.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
What the funding divisions in particular, and maybe some of the policy committees that would get into this, would want to look carefully at the sub-goals, is what you're saying, if they wanted to find out what was central to the mission and the overall goals and whether they're being met and how important they might be in the days and weeks ahead when we're putting the budget together.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coffman, I think that's true. I don't guarantee you that every single state agency has sub-goals for each of their top-level goals. I can only speak to the Department of Administration. We're very rigorous in applying them, and I know that other, by anecdote, I know that other agencies are as well, but we're not an enforcer. We really are just trying to provide information to the public and to collect this data so that we can portray to the public what we are doing giving greater transparency to what we're doing. But we don't try to give letter grades or otherwise judge what agencies are doing. In implementing these goals or in further deploying them, we call that goal deployment or goal alignment. So that's up to each agency, but I think it would be a good question for you to ask them.
And Mr. Chairman, I was expecting that they would be the enforcer. I was seeing if you'd gone through the process wanting to know if you felt they would have that kind of information, and I think you're saying some do and some may not.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other questions at all? Commissioner, we appreciate very much you and former Representative Rhodes for being here this evening and to recognize you, Jim.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the interest of this committee, and I thank you for saying, I think this is extremely important. I think our public will think it's extremely important. It is relatively new, so, you know, we're eager to get more feedback on it, and as you go out and about and talk about it and you get feedback on it, please share that with me, because we want to make this site meaningful, both to the agencies and to you as legislators and to the public.
Commissioner, thank you very much. Just one additional announcement. Wednesday, January 28th, we'll be meeting at 6 o'clock here. There's a joint meeting with Finance. Representative Carlson and myself will be having the governor's budget presented to us. I think the governor's releasing it the day before at some time to the public, and we'll have probably the Commissioner of Finance and others here to explain the budget at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I just have a question, and maybe you don't have the answer, but 2 years ago there was some controversy around whether or not people had budget books printed or not. Has there been some kind of process put together where for those of us that don't want 14 3-inch white binders stacked around for years, now that so much is available online, is there a process for legislators that if they want the hard copy to say so, and if they don't, to decline to save some money around here?
I know Mr. Marks has been working with the department on this a lot, so I'll have him answer your question.
Mr. Chair, members, I think there are going to be very few budget books delivered to us. If you want paper copies, you're probably going to have to print your own off the website. My understanding is we may get it, the House may get as many as 20, which we'll try to divide up amongst people who really want them, but I think the goal will be that most of the finance committees will print the material they want to use, and we're not going to have very many paper copies unless you print them.
Yes, one of the other things that they'll have to do is sort the agency may not give us the way our committee structure and accounts are, so there may be some sorting of that needs to be done, and fiscal staff will help anybody with that, I'm sure. Or other committee administrators.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Others at all? Anything else? If not, thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.